This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Pope Francis spends a busy day in Washington. A former Israeli prime minister offers another approach to solving Middle East problems. An invisibility cloak could become a reality.
The collective reflection from each individual of these antennas reflection are from a flat floor or a mirror or a wall. You do not see the image object anymore.
A country music star goes on the disabled list. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. With church bells ringing joyously and thousands cheering, Pope Francis arrived Wednesday afternoon on the grounds of the Catholic University of America in Washington to lead his first Mass in the United States. Shouts of Papa Francisco rose as the Pope waved to throngs from the Popemobile in a motorcade that wound its way through the campus. Thousands gathered for the Mass, delivered in Spanish, and held outside the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. At the start of the service, Pope Francis conferred sainthood on Junipero Serra, a controversial 18th-century Spanish missionary who spread the word of the Church in what is now California. Earlier in the day, the Pope was warmly welcomed by President Obama to the White House.
Here at home and around the world, may our generation heed your call to never remain on the sidelines of this march of living hope. For that great gift of hope, Holy Father, we thank you and welcome you with joy and gratitude to the United States of America.
The Pope spoke of his concerns about the environment.
Accepting the urgency, it seems clear to me also that climate change is a problem we can no longer be left to a future generation.
White House correspondent Arup Pandey was there and described the event to International Edition Sarah Williams.
In terms of the president, the White House, and he himself talked about today his deep admiration and respect for this man and how this man has inspired so many people, not just Catholics, people of all faiths, not just Americans, but all over the world. And one thing that was really that really struck, I think, everyone here is the fact that both of these men, both of these world leaders, talked about their shared values. If you listen to President Obama, he talked about how the Pope has reminded us to stand up for justice and against inequality, to basically lift up the poor. And this is a value that President Obama has also spoken out against, making sure that social equality and social justice is there for everyone. So this theme of shared values between these two leaders was pretty big. Both leaders talked about protecting religious liberty, protecting the rights of religious minorities. And then one huge theme, obviously, was the fight against climate change. You heard the president say that the Pope reminds us to protect our planet. And the Pope spoke at length about how President Obama's initiative to fight climate change was very encouraging, and that, you know, we should be mindful of the type of world that we leave to future generations.
And I thought it was interesting that the Pope began his remarks by identifying himself as a son of an immigrant. And of course,
that's
immigration,
right,
is very controversial, not just in the United States, but around the world at the moment.
Right. I mean, he struck, from the very beginning, he struck a tone of humility. And if he followed that up talking about the importance of tolerance and inclusiveness. And I think that speaks to what not only what's going on in the United States in terms of the immigration issue, which has been going on for years, but obviously worldwide with the crisis in Europe and the people who are basically leaving their homes in the Middle East for a better life. So he talked about that. He talked about being the son of an immigrant, as you said, and of also being inclusive and really being there and showing compassion for those who need help.
Aru, what was the reaction of the crowd who saw the Pope arrive at the White House?
Well, we've seen so much buildup about this Pope's visit and how he's considered the people's Pope, and you really saw it. They were all there. kind of saying the same thing, that this is the most approachable pope that we've ever had. One woman said, I'm Catholic, but I'm Catholic more so now because of Pope Francis. They talked a lot about how he speaks out for the underprivileged, and they said he feels the pain of every single human being. We're blessed to have a pope like him. One woman stood in line, I think, for 6 to 8 hours, and she said it was worth it. It was amazing to hear his words and the way he has lifted up so many communities around the world.
White House correspondent Arup Pandey speaking with International Edition Sarah Williams. Pope Francis will become the first pope to address a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress later today. Lawmakers there are both eagerly awaiting and bracing for comments from the pope, who's already spoken about immigration, the family structure, and climate change, and has challenged the rich and powerful. Congressional correspondent Cindy Sane reports.
At the U.S. Capitol, anticipation has reached a fever pitch over Pope Francis' address to a joint meeting of Congress. And no one is more excited than the man who invited him, devout Catholic and House Speaker John Boehner. In a special video, Boehner said lawmakers are very interested in what the pontiff has to say.
His outreach to the poor, the fact that, you know, he thinks people ought to be more religious. He's got some other positions that are a bit more controversial, but it's the Pope.
But some analysts say those controversial positions could end up making Mr. Boehner regret his invitation. Pope Francis has spoken out strongly about the dangers to our planet posed by economic injustice and climate change. And the Vatican has welcomed the Iran nuclear deal. The Pope's positions on these issues are closer to Democratic President Barack Obama's views than those held by leading Republicans. Analyst Reverend Thomas Reese explains.
And when he comes to Congress, if he says you should welcome the immigrants and refugees, you should care for the poor, you should protect the environment, these are issues that if he says them, the Democrats are going to jump up and applaud. What are the Republicans going to do? Sit there on their hands? If they get up and applaud, then the Tea Party people are going to be very upset with them.
I mean, one Republican, Representative Paul Gosar, says he will boycott the speech because of the Pope's focus on what he calls the fool's errand of climate change. On the Democratic side, Representative Luis Gutierrez contrasted the compassion of Pope Francis for migrants with the harsh anti-immigrant rhetoric of leading Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump.
In many ways, Pope Francis represents the anti-Trump, the antidote to his venom.
But on other issues, such as gay marriage and abortion, the pontiff may say things many Democrats do not like. Reese says he hopes Pope Francis will have this message for Congress.
I think hopefully he will also tell them, get over your partisan politics. You know, it's time to get together, work together to solve the problems of this nation and of the world. And at that point, all the American people will get up and applaud.
It may take more than even a visit by Pope Francis to get members of Congress to stop fighting and work together. Cindy Sane, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
When Pope Francis goes to New York next, he will be a guest at the home of a former New York City mayor. Most people like the idea, although some New Yorkers have another opinion. VOA's Bernard Schussman has more.
It is formally called the residence of the Apostolic Nuncio to the United Nations, Archbishop Bernardito Auza. The Papal Nuncio's residence is on 72nd Street near Fifth Avenue, close to Central Park. The neo-Renaissance townhouse was owned in the late 1800s and into the 20th century by former New York City Mayor Hugh Grant and his family. Archbishop Auza described how it came to the New York Catholic Diocese.
In the last year, you know, before he died, he decided to bequeath the family residence to the Pope, with the specific purpose that it would be the residence of the Holy See Permanent Observer Mission to the United Nations.
72nd Street is preparing for the visit and a shutdown. The police have deposited barriers and have already placed no parking signs throughout the neighborhood. Traffic in an 80-block area will be banned, or at least very limited. There's mixed feeling in this beautiful New York neighborhood about the Pope staying in their midst.
I think it's amazing. I think it's exactly what New York and the rest of the world needs, some optimism. And I think he's, you know, he's a great leader and he's going to do amazing things everywhere that he goes. So I'm very excited.
I don't like it. I live in a neighborhood right here and it's going to be impossible for me to walk.
The traffic, the tie-up, the inconvenience.
I live in the neighborhood. I've lived here for 20 years. And there have been other popes here who stayed here before, and so I'm fine with it.
Overwhelmingly, it seems New Yorkers are excited and look forward to catching a glimpse of Pope Francis in his travels across the city of New York. Bernard Chessman, VOA News, New York.
And now let's find out what people are saying online about the Pope's visit. Social media correspondent G. Abby Lee says a lot of them are tweeting about the Pope's first Mass in the United States. Hi, G.
Hi, Ray. The historic Mass took place at the Catholic University at CatholicUNIV on Twitter. The account was actively sharing tweets about the papal visit, and here's an example. The media outlet Catholic News Service is on Twitter. At Catholic News SVC is sent out this tweet about an hour ago. Canonization of hashtag Syra is outside Basilica, where Catholic University has its graduations. Hashtag Pope in D.C., hashtag Pope in U.S.
And that is referring to Junipero Serra, a Spanish missionary.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, how often are the last two hashtags actually being used?
Well, nearly 105,000 tweets used hashtag Pope in D.C. in the last 24 hours, according to the Topsy Analytics website. Now, less than half of the number used hashtag Pope in U.S., with around 45,000 people using that hashtag. Ray, I told you yesterday that hashtag Pope in D.C. generates an image of the Capitol in the tweet. But I also realized today that hashtag Pope in U.S. generates an image of Pope Francis with the American flag in the background.
I see. Actually, I haven't seen it. I'll have to take a look. And any tweets about the homily, G.?
A lot, and not surprisingly, the Catholic News Service is very quick with the updates. Here is its first tweet about the homily. Hashtag Pope Francis at Canonization Mass. Believers are called to rejoice and not settle for just being comfy.
And can you tell us anything about the U.S. government's reaction to all of this?
Well, the White House tweeted a quote by President Obama, and it tweeted, Holy Father, we thank you and welcome you with joy and gratitude to the United States of America. At POTUS, hashtag Pope in D.C. That tweet has been marked as a favorite 555 times. Ray?
Thanks, G. Social media reporter G. Abby Lee. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. That's J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak is offering a strategic approach to deal with the security challenges in the Middle East. During a discussion at Harvard University, he noted that Israel shares profound common interests with Turkey and many Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt, to fight what he calls radical Muslim terror and the hegemonic intentions of Iran. International Edition senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi followed the discussion. which also entailed former Prime Minister Barak's vision of solving the Arab-Israeli conflict.
While he is standing in favor of a two-state solution, Ehud Barak believes strongly that it could come through a comprehensive approach to collectively tackle all the security challenges in the region, which he said is going through a geopolitical earthquake.
All the threats are there. But there is good news that Israel is the strongest country 1,000 miles around Jerusalem, from Tripoli in Libya to Tehran, including these two capitals. So Israel, to the best of my judgment, can act out of strength and self-confidence to change the reality. It's a bad reality to enough to propose getting into this regional summit or international conference and be ready to discuss issues. Palestinian issue should be the first table because all the neighboring leaders, the moderate autocrats, they agree with us about the priority of the threats of Iran and radical Muslim terror. But they cannot push these common interests to the surface because they are afraid of the response of their own streets.
Ehud Barak acknowledged that without starting with a serious effort to achieve the two-state solution, the regional actors will not cooperate in any of the other issues.
But Israeli leaders have ignored the Arab League peace plan initiative that would exchange full peace for withdrawal of Israeli forces from Arab lands.
Ehud Barak admitted that Israel should have agreed with its own reservations to the initiative because it would gain a lot from entering into peace with the entire Arab world.
When it comes to the Arab world, we have a lot to get. It's recognition, it's participation in major projects, it's smoothing our efforts vis-a-vis the Iranians, and it is the starting point for a long generational process of Israel getting accepted by the region. So we have a lot to get from it, and Israel is much more tolerant to the idea of making daring steps vis-a-vis the Palestinians within the context of a regional agreement. We have to do it.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak said that Israel is strong enough to offer peace and without establishing a viable Palestinian state living in peace next to Israel, it would not be a Jewish state or a democratic state.
International Edition senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi. Coming up, hiding in plain sight. This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new? In the Gaza Strip, to help alleviate chronic shortages, Dr. Tarek Loubani created a low-cost stethoscope using a 3D printer, an idea he got by seeing a cheap plastic toy being used by children. Loubani says a 3D printed stethoscope can be made for just $2.50.
We've tested it, we've validated it to ensure that it is actually as good as any other stethoscope that you could use.
The 3D printer deposits layers of red filament, making the parts for the stethoscope, which is then assembled by hand. Dr. Ayman Sahabani works at a hospital in Gaza.
This stethoscope that was made today, it fills a need. And now we can provide a stethoscope to each doctor.
Dr. Loubani says he hopes his 3D printed stethoscope can be made anywhere in the world where it may be needed. For VOA's What's New, I'm Martin Seacrest.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Imagine throwing a cloak over your head and becoming invisible to the outside world. You might think it's the stuff of science fiction and fantasy, but think again. It could soon become a reality. VOA's Jessica Berman explains.
An invisibility cloak, or a cloth that renders its wearer completely invisible to others, is not a new concept. It's been a popular device for generations of novelists, and scientists have been working on the idea for years. Researchers at the University of California at Berkeley may have come the closest yet to developing the real thing. Zhang Zhang is a material scientist at the university. He helped develop the cloaking material, he says, takes advantage of the latest advances in optics technology. We see an object because light scatters as it bounces off its surface, and the distorted waves reveal its shape. But the cloak stops those bounces and distortions, rendering the object effectively invisible. Here's how it works. The cloak is studded with millions of tiny reflective nano antennas made of gold, each one about 1/1000th of the thickness of a human hair. These antennas stop the light from scattering and distorting, so it looks like the light is being reflected from a flat surface.
Now, from these engineered antennas, which are millions of them distributed on the cloak, now the collective reflection from each individual of these antennas reflection are from a flat floor or a mirror or a wall. You do not see the image object anymore.
There are other invisibility cloaks, but these are designed to bend light around an object. They're bulky and cannot conceal objects that aren't smooth. The tiny mirrors in Zhang's cloak solve the problem. They are so tiny, the skin-tight cloth covers nooks and crannies and bumps and still reflects light as if it was a smooth mirror. So far, the researchers have been working with very tiny objects, 36 by 36 micrometers in size, visually undetectable. But Zhang says the science would be the same on a macro scale, and the technology can be scaled up to cover humans, possibly in the next 5 to 7 years. The military might be interested in making soldiers and aircraft invisible, but Zhang says there could be a number of everyday uses of the cloak, including cosmetics.
Where people can make sizable bellies now become six-pack, you know, that can be flattened up visually, not the real. You know, scars on the face and things that can make it disappear.
Zhang says the cloak could also be wrapped around the rear frame in a car window, making the blind spot disappear so people can see approaching vehicles. An article describing the invisibility cloak technology is published in the journal Science. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Country music star Tim McGraw can't sing. That's not an editorial comment, but a medical one. McGraw's had to cancel the last two shows of his current Shotgun Rider tour because of vocal distress. International Audition's Pete Heinlein talked with VOA Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about McGraw's condition, which is similar to one which sidelined several other top acts, including Little Big Town, Kelly Clarkson, Sam Smith, and Meghan Trainor.
Nikki, what's the story here?
Yeah, Tim McGraw's been added to the list. It's interesting. He's been on his Shotgun Rider tour since June, and it's been taking a toll on his vocal cords. Lucky for him, he doesn't have to have surgery. But the doctor has mandated that he cancels his last two tour dates. So he's been nonstop, but apparently he can't finish it. Not according to doctor's orders. He must rest. So the last two shows have been canceled. Hopefully they will be rescheduled sometime soon.
Boy, that's a tough one for us country music fans, especially.
Yeah. You know, I think that a lot of people, the industry really has to reevaluate its approach to tour. Because a lot of these artists, they're singing. They're not making money off of album sales, so they have to tour. That's how they're making the majority of their money. And they're doing like hour sets or 90-minute long sets. And they're taxing their vocals because they're doing these sets consecutively. Like, they're not getting the proper rest. If they smoke or drink at all, that also impacts their vocal cords.
And they do.
Yes, of course. Even if it's a glass of wine, it still does stress the vocal cords when you are singing that intensely on the road. And there is the incentive to just keep going because there's so much money riding on these tours.
We could have a little double wide planet in an empty field. We could have a big old white picket wrap around on a hill. Don't make a difference to me, baby, where the wind takes me, long as I'm with you, girl. We could have something or nothing, still be sitting on top of the world.
What's happening? I mean, Tim McGraw was here in town a couple of weeks ago and did a really phenomenal show.
Yeah.
What are the rest of his fans who are holding tickets? What happens to them?
Well, you know, it's a bummer for everybody involved. They haven't said when they're going to reschedule those dates. And I still think in the grand scheme of things, like Little Big Town had to cancel several weeks worth of shows. And his is just the last two shows of his final tour. So I think, you know, it's a bummer for everybody because people have to reschedule as far as artists and as well as the venue and everybody who's involved in making this show phenomenal as it is.
We remember how Adele came on the scene with that fantastic full voice.
Yeah.
And then she's gone.
Yes.
I mean, can she come back? I mean,
she's actually progress? Her new album is set to drop fairly soon at the end of this year. So she has recovered fairly well. But, you know, it's an excellent point. There's so much pressure on these artists to keep producing. So not only are they touring, but a lot of them are recording their albums while they are touring. So that even makes it worse. But as far as Adele's concerned, she took a break. She had her vocal surgery, and she's coming back this year. And Tim McGraw as well is getting ready to drop his next album, November 6th, called Damn Country Music.
Nikki Strong, always a pleasure to have you here. You can catch Nikki Strong on Country Hits USA on VOA 1. You can also reach out to Nikki on Twitter at VOA_music. Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you.
Like we got love, you're sitting on top of the world.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news and information on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, as required by law, the President of the United States informs the Congress which countries produce illicit drugs or serve as transit points. But that does not mean that their governments are not making a substantial effort to rectify the situation or that they are not cooperating with the United States and other nations to control the production and flow of illegal drugs. It just means that due to a combination of geographic, commercial, political, and economic factors, those who produce or smuggle narcotics deem these countries to be convenient for the operation of their nefarious trade. Of the 22 countries that made this year's list, 17 are in Latin America. Though Bolivia and Venezuela did not make meaningful efforts to meet their obligations to international counter-narcotics agreements over the past year, four Latin American countries made commendable progress. Last year, about 86% of cocaine destined for the United States moved through seven countries in Central America. The remaining 14% traveled through the Caribbean. Mexico, working with the United States through the Merida Initiative, made headway toward breaking the power and impunity of transnational criminal organizations, strengthening border controls and law enforcement, and improving the capacity of its judicial system to investigate and prosecute drug cases. In the Caribbean, Haiti took advantage of U.S. technical assistance and financial support to strengthen its police brigade in the fight against narcotics trafficking. Summoning considerable political will, Haiti's government stood up to criminal organizations, improved its counter-narcotics capability, beefed up its maritime interdiction, allowing it to start seizing drug shipments, and last year passed a law criminalizing public corruption, which goes hand in hand with the illicit drug trade. In South America, Colombia and Peru, countries that struggle with large-scale drug production, have been successful in seizing numerous large shipments of cocaine. Peru developed alternative livelihoods for farmers previously dependent on illicit cultivation, while Colombia's eradication efforts helped reduce coca cultivation by 52% in 5 years. Illicit drugs are destructive to people and society. The United States will continue to expand and enhance collaborative counter-narcotics and anti-crime partnerships to eradicate them globally.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.